From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm David Green. The cradle of civilization, the ancient Middle East, is young, very young. About two-thirds of the population is under 30 years old. And this Arab youth bulge is growing up in a different world from their parents' generation. New technologies are accelerating change. Facebook and Twitter connect young Arabs to the wider world, and smartphones and webcams keep them up to date. The Arab media is also transforming. Even autocratic governments have been forced to accommodate the aspirations of the young. In our occasional series on Arab youth, NPR's Deborah Amos reports from Damascus.
Sabah al-khair, Syria. Good morning, Syria.
This is how many Syrians start their day, listening to host Hani El-Sayed on Al Madina Radio. Her morning show is number one.
Good morning, Syria. Sabah al-khair, Syria.
With a mix of Arabic and English, Hani Sayed says she's pushing the boundaries of free speech.
We were the first private radio to open in Syria, and we are allowed now to do something different, so that's Syria opening up.
The opening began with a change in the law, allowing private media after years of heavy state control.
Take a break with Al Madina.
Hani.
Licenses have been awarded to would-be media moguls who have close ties to the government. Still, young talents like Sayed have the freedom to talk about topics that have long been taboo.
Sex education and child abuse and molestation. And then you've got the other topics like anorexia and bulimia and divorce and marital problems, so on and so forth.
How far do you go with politics?
We're not a political radio station. We're not licensed to do politics.
And with one answer, she defines the limits of Syria's media opening. A top radio station can raise controversial social issues, but government officials remain wary of political speech, says Peter Harling, based in Damascus for the International Crisis Group.
It's been very hands-on, a bit of a control freak, if you want, till now, but and they do realize that there is competition out there now, and they have to recognize the change and adjust to it. They just find it hard to do so.
The competition is information streaming into the country, televised, tweeted, and text. Young Syrians are more informed than ever before. They can ignore old-style government media, which is little more than propaganda.
I'm not sure who really watches the Syrian media or reads the Syrian news anymore.
So, says Peter Harling, the government has loosened controls on private outlets. Now there are dozens of new radio stations, a television outlet, some private newspapers, and magazines run by a new generation of journalists.
My name is Sami Mubayed. I am editor-in-chief of Syria's English monthly Forward magazine.
Capital F.
Mubayed checks on the next edition, last-minute ads and copy edits with his staff.
This is cool.
There's an online version of this glossy magazine that includes blogs and tweets on topics that range from social to the political.
We're often asked about censorship. Does your magazine get read by the censors before it goes to newsstands? And people are surprised when I say no.
While Forward magazine does publish a certain amount of political criticism, others writing in Arabic about similar topics have gone to jail. Ask Arab journalists how they know what's permitted and what can get them arrested, and they all talk about red lines, sensitive topics, for example, criticizing government policies or personalities. It's the term Obaid uses to describe self-censorship, how he decides what's okay to print, how he walks the line.
It's suicide to walk over the red line. It's professional suicide to walk way below it. What's smart is to walk on that red line and try to push the bar so you raise the red line of what can be said and what cannot be said. Perhaps slowly, but eventually they are changed.
But the biggest challenge to the government's monopoly over the media is on the web. Dozens of new websites, political blogs, and Facebook groups have emerged that aren't so easy to control. The Syrian government has banned as many as 200 sites, including Facebook and YouTube.
Okay.
But look around this cafe. Free Wi-Fi comes with the strong cardamom-flavored coffee and the backgammon boards. Tech-savvy young Syrians know how to get around those bans, and they openly browse their Facebook sites. But it raises a question. When people can see and read everything on the internet, why do Arab governments still try to control access to information? Khaled El Akhtiar, an online journalist himself, explains how it works when you believe someone is always watching.
They cannot control the internet, but they can control the people. They don't want you to feel comfortable. So sometimes it's really this issue, like a psychological issue.
So it's okay to be on Facebook, you just have to feel a little uncomfortable about it.
Yeah.
And everybody your age just knows what these rules are.
Yeah, we learn fast.
They learn because bloggers have been jailed under a vague law that criminalizes undermining national sentiment. Internet cafes are licensed, and owners must report the national ID number of every user and the sites that are surfed. The Committee to Protect Journalists ranks Syria in the top 10 worst countries in which to be a blogger, a list that includes Egypt and Saudi Arabia. While the internet has been a new challenge, Arab governments have learned how to counter any threat, says Josh Landis. He's an American professor who studies Syria.
It's about establishing limits. The government sits on top of its people and it says, okay, you can read all this stuff, you can do it, but if you think you're going to organize, if you think that you're going to make a campaign or you're going to try to bring down the government, you're going to go to jail. And that's very clear in Syria.
And it's clear across the region, says Rami Khoury at American University of Beirut.
Nobody has been able to use the media, and the new media especially, to bring about political change anywhere. Not an opening, not a change in leadership, not a serious change in policy, nothing.
Khoury has launched a group of researchers to document internet use in the Arab world, especially among the young.
Young people are using the web as a means of creating parallel worlds where they have less constraints, they're not controlled, and get a kind of vicarious thrill of living more freely than they can live in their real societies. And all of these constraints have disappeared when they're on the web.
The research shows that most young Arabs are not looking to the web to change the world. They just want to join it, mostly the music and the entertainment. Some may search news sites, says Khoury. They are the most informed generation, but not empowered. Not yet. Deborah Amos, NPR News.
That report from Deborah Amos was a collaboration with America Abroad, a monthly public radio program about international affairs.